Hello and welcome to Overvolted. I am your host, Kirk Johnson, and we have Donnie and Alex with us. Say hi.
How's it going, guys?
Hey, everybody. It's been a while.
It's not been that long. Come on. We've had a lot of exciting stuff happen over the past couple of weeks here, and we're actually going to be talking exclusively about the new RTX 30 series, the 3080, the 3090, and the would-be 3070 if it didn't get pushed back until the 29th. So let's go ahead and get into it. I hope everyone's been keeping up on all the performance and everything, charts and whatnot. Donnie, you've probably been looking at this a lot closer than even I, so if you wanted to talk a little bit about performance, where it stands, and kind of where you see things.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously by now everyone knows that the 3080 fell a little bit short of what they originally promised in terms of performance uplift from the 2080. It's, I mean, I think the last thing I seen was around 65-70% better at 4K, while it was roughly 35% faster than the 2080 Ti at the same resolution. That's, I mean, reasonable. It's pretty good. I kind of wish they didn't overpromise to begin with. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
Two times the throughput? Come on.
Yeah, that was saying 2x is a bit much. I mean, there are probably scenarios where it's closer to that, but they're few and far between. Obviously, RTX performance is something they focused a lot on, with ray tracing, and I think they've improved the experience there. I haven't tested a card myself, but just looking at the reviews and other hands-on that people had with it.
Well, you brought up in your Teraflops article about kind of why you thought that, you know, they were being a little deceitful about publishing numbers based on their FP32 throughput. Do you think you can kind of explain why you feel that that's kind of a misnomer now, and why that performance wasn't really there when we saw, you know, twice the floating point 32?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think deceitful is a little bit of a strong word. Not that, you know, the FP32, you know, theoretical compute that they're touting is accurate. It's just that it's accurate in the sense that that is what the card is capable of. It's just that's not really representative of its actual gaming performance compared to, you know, the best of Turing, like the 2080 Ti. You know, in my article, I talk about how, you know, it's literally 2x the throughput compared to something like a 2080 Ti in FP32 alone, but it's only 35% faster at 4K. So that's definitely a problem. And what that really suggests is that even though they've raised the FP32 compute ceiling, they're not really able to fully utilize that, not even close.
That's because they share the same path as the Integer and the 32 on one half of the CUDA core, right?
Yes, exactly. So one whole path can do either FP32 or INT32. Whereas with Turing, there was one dedicated FP32 and one dedicated INT32. So this does, you know, alleviate some of the potential bottlenecks there, but it creates different ones.
Yeah, this new architecture effectively doubles the FP32, but makes half of them do double duty as Integer in the event that Integer calculations are needing to be processed. Right. And they help optimize that a little bit by making slices where they can dedicate, you know, 16 of those FP32s to Integer if they need it, but FP32 when they don't. So they can kind of balance that workload. But I think even NVIDIA said themselves that they see only like 20% Integer and the rest being floating point when they see games commonly. Is that about what you remember?
From what I read, it's closer to about 35% Integer in common workloads like gaming. Obviously that's going to vary. Not every game is exactly the same.
Yeah, which makes this new architecture actually kind of smart, really, where they allow these cores to do this double duty, and they can dynamically flip it depending on what they need and what the game requires.
Yeah, but then because of that, we get there's some questions though, since we have the 3090, which theoretically is 20% faster than the 3080, but as we've seen in execution, it's only on average around 10% faster at 4K, and that's the best case scenario.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I've seen some AIB models that are clocked a little higher that can be, you know, 15% faster. But the problem with that is the 3080 scales with the reference models, you know, with the non-reference models too.
And that in general, though, is why calculating performance based on raw teraflop is kind of a misnomer, because like you said, you know, 35% is in games, give or take. And so with the new RTX architecture, these new CUDA cores, or what are they called? Are they still called CUDA cores? I'm not even sure.
Yeah, they're still called CUDA cores. I mean, I think they specify, you know, no, they're still called CUDA cores.
Yeah, okay. So because some of them can be repurposed to integer, then you're never going to really see that full teraflop performance perform in games.
And NVIDIA's basic guideline for CUDA cores seems to be if it can do FP32 at all, it's a CUDA core.
Yeah, but we'll never see that full teraflop performance in games because they can repurpose those to do the integer math that's needed in some of these games. And so really calculating teraflops of these NVIDIA GPUs has become a futile exercise. You know, it's not really a beneficial metric anymore. And it hasn't really been to compare GPUs between NVIDIA and AMD in the past either, because we've seen things like Vega have huge teraflop performance on paper, but it never really came to fruition.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even when you're looking at in the same generation with the same GPU architecture, FP32 like performance hasn't necessarily been a very accurate indicator of the difference in performance you can expect, especially now with Ampere. I mean, the 20% difference between the 3090 and the 3080 is not what you see in gaming or even in compute workloads, because I've seen the 3090 go as much as 25% faster in compute in some of these reviews. So I don't, like, that's unexplainable to me. So I personally just think teraflops are something we should probably stop talking about. I mean, when you look at CPUs, we don't have a generic number that we can just use a formula to calculate what it can do. You just have to do the work, get a review, I mean, get an actual workload done and see how long it takes to do it, or get a score or something like that. And that's how you compare two CPUs. Trying to decide which GPU to buy based on the, you know, the teraflop count is terrible.
I would hope people aren't doing that, especially at this point, considering how long it's... I mean... The number is just sort of this theoretical number that hasn't really translated to gaming performance for as long as I've been aware of it. I remember, you know, consoles used to have the teraflop number.
They still do.
It was supposed to mean something.
Yeah.
I know, but I mean, I remember back in like the PlayStation 2 and 3 era, they would talk about these numbers a lot. And, you know,
weren't even teraflops, just,
were they gigaflops back then?
Yeah.
I think for the PS2, it was gigaflops.
The first teraflop graphics card would have been one of the Radeon ones from around 08 or 09, I think. I can't remember the exact name of it.
Gigahertz edition. No, just kidding.
Hey, that was a big deal back then. Okay, guys, come on.
The first GPU to hit 1 gigahertz?
Yeah, that was a big deal.
Kind of.
Well, so it was the Athlon when it hit the 1 gigahertz mark. You remember that? I'm dating myself. So, yes, I know. Keep going.
Moving back to Ampere, though, I kind of wanted to talk about the recent announcement that the 3070 would be pushed back. You alluded to it in the intro. NVIDIA announced that they are pushing it to the October 29th. It was originally scheduled for October 15th.
Mm-hmm.
They cite that, you know, they want to make sure that there's enough cards to get into people's hands because so many people complained about not being able to buy a 3080. So this is them listening to the audience, to the customers. And I think that's probably part of it. I can't say that wouldn't be true, but I also think that it coinciding with, you know, AMD's announcement on the 28th. I mean, I have to imagine that if the street date for the card is the 29th, then the review date is going to be the 28th. And so the same day AMD is announcing what they have, NVIDIA will be having reviews bombarded of the 3070.
with the pushback of the 3070 to the 29th so that they can actually have stock to sell, do you think that kind of gives some credence or credit to the people that are claiming that the launch was rushed for the 3080 and 3090?
I think when you look at the entire situation that happened with the 3080 and 3090, there's all kinds of credit to say that the launch was rushed. For one, AIBs had different cards that they sent to reviewers than what they were selling, which some AIBs fixed this early on so reviewers were able to get the proper samples, but some didn't. They had to send the reviewers samples that had capacitors that weren't as good as the ones that they were actually putting on store shelves. So that means that they didn't have a lot of time to change that, and it was only probably days or weeks before, you know, release that they discovered these issues and were able to address them.
But are we sure that it was the capacitors themselves that were causing the problems?
At this point, I'm pretty sure that the capacitors were more of a solution to a deeper problem. And what I mean by that is the capacitors, at that stage in the power pipeline, are helping to alleviate the problem that is really being caused by, from what I can tell, these cards are, they're really not good at, once you get past around 950 millivolts, the power just spikes up. I mean, there's an article here by Keith from WCCF Tech where he undervolts his card. And when he gets to around, 850 millivolts, the exact numbers, I'm not sure. I'll have to look at them. But once you get to around 850 millivolts, it uses a third of the power for about 2 or 3% less performance, at least in that game that he was testing. But I've heard similar things from other people who were testing this. And so if they're getting that much of a power increase at that little of a clock speed increase, then this is showing that either the Samsung 8-nanometer node is just not very good, or they just were really trying to push out as much performance as possible and they didn't care about anything else because, you know, day one reviews.
You remember when AMD would do the same thing, right? They would release a card that was, everyone would say that it was overclocked a little further than the sweet spot, you know, or quite significantly so, just to get that performance to be competitive. And it suffered really terribly because of it, right?
Mm-hmm. It's a similar situation here. I mean, this really echoes back to the Vega launch, or really any major GPU launch from AMD in recent years, with the exception of, I guess, the 5700 series, which didn't seem to need any undervolting, really.
Well, there's the retort that always came across from all the AMD fans, of course, was, oh, just undervolt it, right? That gets rid of all the problems, and you get rid of the heat problems and all of the power draw problems, and it becomes a performant card and maybe even increases the performance because you remove that thermal barrier and the boosting and all of that. And so, of course, all the NVIDIA fans blasted that as an option, saying, yeah, but that's not just what out of the box somebody would do with their card, right?
Which it's not, honestly.
Yeah, and now we see that the shoe is on the other foot with this circumstance where NVIDIA has now done what AMD has done in the past. And now, of course, there's some that are like, oh, look, you can undervolt it and look how well it performs. But this hasn't... Yeah. This hasn't been a thing. And so NVIDIA doesn't have any real driver thing that does it, but AMD has chill and some of these other things that are built into the graphics drivers.
AMD has a button that will auto undervolt your GPU for you, depending on what kind it is.
Yeah. And we don't see that kind of software support for this from NVIDIA. You have to pull up something like MSI Afterburner and then go through the process of adjusting your power curves and things like that, and then of course validating it, but you have to validate it on AMD as well. I think this might kind of allude more to the variable quality of the silicon that's coming out of this 8-nanometer, where they might have had to shoot way high just to make sure they encompassed everything, right?
Yeah,
I was actually going to say that I think that that is what happened there. Because it just doesn't make sense for NVIDIA to overvault these things for what is roughly, you know, 1 or 2% performance, which is what we've seen in people who've done this. Donnie, it's between like 1 and 3% from the numbers that I've seen. You seen anything?
It's definitely inside 5%. I can tell you that. I haven't seen anything.
Which is like not worth amazing. Not worth the massive amount of power draw that you're taking in the heat and the over-engineering the cooler and everything that they've basically done for these cards.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, to be fair, NVIDIA did release a driver that seems to have addressed the problem. Brad Chakos from PC World was able to confirm that he didn't get any more crashing in the scenarios he was seeing crashing before. That being said, I've heard from others that the new driver has not fixed the issue for them. And I think, honestly, this comes down to, with the amount of power these cards are drawing, there's a lot of different, you know, steps in the power pipeline that can cause the problem. You know, your power supply, your power to the wall, everything can be a factor in this and cause instability when, you know, you're drawing near or exceeding 400 watts of power. This is not something most people have ever dealt with before in a consumer graphics card.
The minor clock speed nerf that they put in there, I think it was only, what, 50 hertz or something. It was very minor, go ahead.
Officially, NVIDIA is saying that they are not adjusting the clock speed with the driver. Like, it's not limiting or capping the clock speed. What it does seem to be doing is, when you look at the what clocks are being hit at a certain time, it is going down ever so slightly in certain situations, but it is not like an overall limit in clock speed.
Yeah, they didn't.
If that makes any sense.
They didn't pull down the hard line at the top, right? But
yeah,
I'm thinking that slight adjustment that they made wasn't enough to overcome some of the more poorer quality dies that were released. I think that might be more what it is akin to.
That's entirely possible. Unfortunately, at this point, all we can do is kind of speculate about that. I think you're probably onto something, though. The only reason I could see NVIDIA would be pushing so much voltage into these things in the first place is that the amount of clock frequency they're able to get out of this silicon, it varies greatly because the process just isn't refined for these large dies. I mean, if I understand correctly, Samsung's 8-nanometer node was geared towards mobile use, and this would probably be the largest and the only large dies manufactured on the process.
Yeah, so a lot of unknowns with the production quality, and they just had to brute force their way around it. And I don't think AMD has had any better luck either with some of their products we've seen in the past and have attributed their overclocked or overvolted dies to being a silicon quality issue.
I mean, I think the name of this podcast is
Overvolted,
you know, because of AMD's history with graphics cards. So yeah, it's not something we've never seen, but it's something we've never seen really from NVIDIA before. I mean, obviously this echoes back to the Fermi days, but this is kind of different than that too. With Fermi, it was just a new node that they didn't know too much about, and they were bleeding edge and kind of didn't make the right design decisions that they did solve with the 580, which was a refresh. But in this case, I don't know. I think they're probably going to release another driver that limits the voltage further and increases stability, but actually does lose a couple percent performance. I don't think the current driver is really changing performance too much. But where you're going to get more stability, you're also probably going to lose some performance. That's my take.
And honestly, I don't see them making that edit until after the 3070 launches, just FYI.
I mean, there's an argument to be made that the reason why they've limited the amount of cards that they've put out for the 3080 and the 3090 is to kind of control the issue. that they probably seen a little bit ahead of launch, but didn't want to take their foot off the gas and just decided we'll release it small quantity and solve it from there.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen companies like EVGA themselves that issued a press release stating that they have seen this kind of crashing and has blamed their capacitors as well. Just like, you know, the whole internet basically did for a day or two there. And even though that may not be the root cause or may not have anything to do with it at all, because we've seen crashing on the Tufts that run six of the, you know, quote unquote, higher grade array of capacitors, you know, and really the pause caps and the others are, they both have their strengths and weaknesses. And
sure.
Is it the root cause? Well, maybe some happy medium in between, like what we saw with the Founders Editions, where they run the four pause caps and two of the other, might be the more balanced approach, that you can get the benefits of both because of the responses or the, you know, who knows what. I'm not an electrical engineer, so I'm sure there's a lot that are just rolling in their grave right now, but still.
Sure. And while neither am I, hold on one second, Alex, sorry.
Go ahead.
I can say that historically we've seen graphics cards with SP caps and they didn't have these issues. So it's not like SP caps are just terrible. Yeah, MLCCs are probably better, but I don't think it's just that. I'm sure, like I said, the better capacitors probably help mitigate in some situations these crashing, but I don't think it is neither a silver bullet or the underlying problem. It's more like a Band-Aid.
Yeah, it just depends on their response times and that kind of stuff. And
sure.
But if you have silicon that is making these huge dramatic jumps in power draw and things like that on a millisecond, nanosecond notice, you know, you got to have some good quality caps, but is it going to be the caps or maybe more the architecture that can help save you? And I think it's probably a combination of a lot of things. I definitely wouldn't want to lay the blame to the capacitors because we've seen cards from all different capacitor arrangements crashing. So it can't just be that, and it most likely isn't primarily that. It may be a contributing factor, but I think it's in general a contributing factor. Like, you just can't account for what's going on in the chip.
Mm-hmm. And to be fair, NVIDIA themselves, along with recently releasing the driver, released a statement to something like that effect, saying that, you know, they approve their partners' board designs, they work with them on them, and, you know, there isn't necessarily a problem with any of these capacitor designs.
Yeah, so even the ones that you see with all six pause caps, those are approved by NVIDIA. So it's not like they're trying to sneak under the wire and release something that's inferior. It's not. It's according to spec. And it was approved by NVIDIA to run on the specs that were provided for that card.
No, and if you see... to me, I just think AIBs went to that as a solution, changing the capacitor arrangement, because they were not really sure what was happening, and they thought that that must be the solution.
Well, it sounded plausible. I mean, Igor's lab has a lot of weight in the industry, the reviewer industry, that is, and their opinion is valued. And if they felt there was something wrong, even if they're... may not have been, but they just kind of eyeballed it and thought there might be a problem here, then why not make those changes just to make the customers happy, even if it may not have actually solved the problem? It shows that these AIBs are willing to make changes as drastic as that, even after they've already been lining out the card, in order to make us customers and reviewers happy. I mean, that actually speaks volumes for the AIBs themselves, in my opinion.
I would agree. Yeah, I think a lot of people were throwing some shade at the AIBs, but in this situation, I honestly think that they did their best with what they were given.
I think they actually stepped up very well and actually went above and beyond, in my opinion.
I would agree with that.
I sort of circling back to the point you guys made about a driver. I think we're also going to see AIB cards beef their cards up considerably with this next run of cards that are going to be a lot more widely available too. So I think we're probably going to see an overcorrection, if anything.
Which isn't necessarily a bad thing. It might be bad on the wallet, though. They might raise their prices 10 or 12 bucks.
Yeah. Yeah, I could totally see that.
But going back to the driver thing once again, we saw as well that Linux and the NVIDIA drivers on Linux actually didn't have this crashing problem. Did you know that?
I actually didn't. I didn't really look into, not in a lot of mainstream reviewers use Linux as a, a test system for reviewing graphics cards. So I didn't really see any numbers on it.
Yeah. But none of the Linux people actually were experiencing crashes that I'm aware of. There might have been one or two or something, but I haven't heard. I just know that it was significantly almost mute on that side of the fence. And when NVIDIA released these new drivers that fixed the crashing issue on the Windows side, they didn't have to release a new set of drivers for the Linux side.
Interesting. So
it most likely is mostly the driver's fault for the crashes. Now, whether that's because it was shoving stuff through the GPU causing power spikes, I don't know. That's for their development team to decide to tell us or not, but
I wouldn't be surprised if they were trying to push the cards a little further than they were supposed to on the Windows driver, and the Linux one was built more for stability.
Probably, maybe. I don't know. We didn't see any real changes between the old and new version of the Windows driver. Like we saw maybe a little bit lower on the voltages, but we're talking 0.01 kind of changes, right? Margin of error almost.
It's definitely not the level of changes that I was talking about for doing like an actual undervolt, that's for sure.
Yeah, and we didn't even see really any changes in performance even. And in some cases, it might have actually improved performance just slightly because of thermals or who knows what, right? So even that can be discarded as a margin of error. So it really looks like they fixed something in the driver that was causing the crashes. And boom, now you don't have the crashes, but hey, welcome to launch day, right?
That is the pain of being an early adopter.
It is the pain. Some of the AMD early adopters were still feeling the pain 6 months later until things got fixed. I mean, NVIDIA is not immune to driver errors, as much as people like to claim that their drivers are spick and span and are solid and who knows what. I've had driver problems from both sides.
I've definitely had driver problems from both sides. The one thing I would say is that when it comes to drivers that cause major issues, like the kind of crashing and black screening we've seen in some of these drivers, NVIDIA seems to correct these issues much faster than AMD. It usually takes AMD quite a while to figure out what's going on there.
Yeah. And I think it might have something to do with the amount of monetary resources they had at hand to put towards development teams and things like that.
I'd actually like to talk a little bit about the value proposition of these cards and where they kind of sit in the market.
Okay.
Based on the numbers we've seen, I mean, the 3080 seems to offer the same relative value, like performance per dollar, as the 5700 XT does at 1440p, I think that is. Just at much higher performance, right? So the 5700 XT being, I think, the highest performance per dollar GPU last generation, right? I might be wrong about that.
I think the 5700 was. I think the 5700 XT was not. I could be wrong on that, though. The prices have changed since launch, so.
Either way, though, being able to match the 5700 XT in performance per dollar is a pretty good achievement for an NVIDIA graphics card, I think. I mean, especially when you're comparing it to the 20 series, which I think we all agree was fairly abysmal in terms of the kind of performance per dollar you were getting compared to the 10 series. Of course, performance per dollar is not everything. It's just a very important metric. I think it's one of the most important. At $800, I guess you're not getting more performance anywhere close to that level of performance than you would with the RTX 3080. Is it 800 or 700?
It's 699.
Okay, there we go. Sorry. Well, at $700, even better. But I think when you, you know, look at it generationally over a number of years, I mean, it does leave a lot to be desired when you consider that this is 3 years out from the launch of Turing, right? Was that 2017 or 2018?
Turing was 2018.
Okay, so 2 years out. That's quite a while for NVIDIA.
So, I mean, to kind of play devil's advocate here, not that anyone here that's a listener thinks that I love NVIDIA, because I've said very, very, how do I put this? Critical things of them in the past.
We know you have a Jensen waifu body pillow. Come on.
No, I just like his kitchen, man. Did you see how nice his kitchen is?
I want his stove. As somebody who cooks, that stove is a nice stove.
But anyways,
it doesn't look like he cooks.
It could be getting to the point where it's a lot harder to get the double the performance gains every year that we're used to getting. I can see that, you know, Moore's Law and the performance jumps in CPUs have been kind of rough over the past 10 years, I want to say, compared to what we're used to seeing.
Sure.
Is it possible that GPUs could also be hitting that same wall? Because it's not like AMD is out there doubling performance every year either.
Yeah, just wait till the next gen.
They're certainly not doing that, but, you know, just wait for Big Navi.
I hope so. Maybe you can make a new shirt then.
Waiting on.
I'm hoping we don't have to make a new shirt. That's the thing.
I'm hoping we at least break the streak of the shirt, right? Have a, you know, Big Navi is here or something.
Yeah, it's finally arrived. Something like that. Because, I mean, if we have to make another shirt, that doesn't bode well for AMD at all.
I think we'll have to start making a onesie so we can print further down.
I also kind of want to talk about Jim's latest video.
Yeah.
And I think that the thing that a lot of people are forgetting is that part of the reason why a lot of us were excited for this was because of how bad Turing's launch was. It kind of set expectations so low that when we saw something that was exciting, it really, you know, got you looking forward to something, because this is a 2080 Ti at, you know, $500, which is what the 2070 is supposed to be.
Well, just remember when the 2080 Ti was announced, everyone was like, yeah. And then they're like at $1,200. And you remember that punch in the gut that you felt when they listed their first, you know, Ti card over $1,000. And you're like, whoa.
Oh, I talked to pretty much everyone that I know in this industry and said, are they insane?
Yeah, that definitely folded up my wallet and made it go in my back pocket, right?
So, I mean, you know, Jim made some really great points about how we're not getting the kind of performance that we're used to. And that at the top end, it's really not looking that fantastic, which I think is very true. And a $1,500 graphics card is a very, very expensive graphics card.
It's a big pill to swallow.
If you're an enthusiast that, you know, cares about the money that you spend at all, it's really, really hard to sit down and go, I should spend $1,500 on this graphics card and even consider it. I mean, I think for a lot of enthusiasts, even the 3070 is a lot of money to spend on a graphics card.
Well, we do have the benefit of not being a first-gen RTX card, like the 2080 Ti was. And so we don't go from launch day saying, yeah, skip this generation, it's just a test bed for RTX, get the next generation when it's actually starting to come around, right?
Didn't Jensen say something along the lines of, you know,
it's finally here.
Yeah, Pascal owners, you know, it's safe to upgrade.
Yeah, exactly. He used that exact line. And I think that's what a lot of people were doing, is they were letting RTX kind of cut its teeth with the 2080 series and stuff. And now that the 3080 is here, 3090, it's safe to upgrade, right? Because we don't see anything in the proposed, you know, 4080 kind of thing that's going to be revolutionary or this huge change like what they did between the 2080 Ti and the 3090. You know, you're not going to see this huge drop in price where you can get a 3080 that outperforms a 2080 Ti at half the price. We're not going to see a $400 GPU that outperforms the 3090, right? It's just not going to happen. And so there is some reasoning behind, oh, you can drop $1,400 or $1,500 on a 3090 because you're not going to get eclipsed in the next launch, in the next cycle as easily. Doesn't mean it won't have an, you know, you're obviously going to get performance increases each gen, but the next one that's going to be probably $1,400 again might surpass it by another 30%. But the one that's tied with it might be roughly a few hundred dollars cheaper, but not half. I don't know. We'll see. But that's assuming we don't see anything good from AMD, which I think at this point is kind of unlikely.
Yeah, we can talk forever about AMD, but
that's for another podcast.
I really hope Big Navi is awesome. Please make something awesome. Maybe these cards can be cheaper if Big Navi's awesome. And you know, people can not have to spend so much money on a solid graphics card. There's also one sentiment I've been seeing a lot in the comment sections and on social media and on Reddit, which is people who say that they're totally happy with their, you know, 2060 or 570 or what have you. And they're like, I have no reason to upgrade. And I mean, if you don't, that's totally fair. If you're totally happy with the experience you have, just because reviewers like, you know, me or Donnie come up and say, this thing is fantastic, it's great, it'll, you know, do everything you want. If the current hardware you have is doing everything you want and, you know, performing in the way that, you know, you're happy with, you don't have to listen to us.
Yeah. I mean, these are not cards for 1080p gaming. They're barely cards for 1440p gaming. These are quite literally 4K gaming cards.
So,
yeah.
Looking at this Tech Power Up review, the MSI RTX 3080 Gaming Trio 10 gig is getting the RX 580 is getting 33% of it, performing at 33% of its relative performance at 1080p. If you go ahead and you crank that up to 1440p, it's 25%. And if you crank it up to 4K, it's looks like it's about 20% here.
22, or
yeah,
yep, 20%. You're right.
So I mean, this 570 here is getting absolutely smoked the higher you go on resolutions. Whereas honestly, like at 1080p, this card is going to get near frame limit in a lot of games, so it doesn't really matter. But if you're gaming at, you know, 1080p. And you're happy with the experience you're getting and you can't justify buying an $800 graphics card, please don't buy an $800 graphics card because we tell you to. Value is a very subjective thing. And it really depends on what the user is using these things for.
Well, and that goes back to like the performance per dollar and frames per dollar kind of metrics that we see that put certain graphics cards as the king of the value proposition, right? Who buys their graphics card based off of their value proposition? I buy my graphics cards based on the frame rate that I want in the games that I play. And then I try to justify getting one that lands me at that 60 frames a second rather than 45-ish, right? And so once I get a video card that is 120 frames per second in the game I play, it's probably a little more expensive than I actually need to pay. And so I can dial it back a little bit. That's how I determine what card I buy, not this one's the best bang for your buck. Yeah, you can go buy a video card for a dollar secondhand that gets 30 frames a second in League of Legends, and that's about it, you know. That's the ultimate value proposition, or free from a friend that upgraded to a 3080, right? Those are the best deals, but that doesn't mean that's the card you want to use, right?
And it kind of bothers me too when people will come up to me and then say, yeah, you recommended this card, but, or this processor, but I got this for free from somebody. And yeah. I'm like, well, free is better than anything I could ever recommend you. Somebody yeah. gives you something for free and it does whatever you need to do in an amount you can tolerate. You won the value proposition because you didn't pay for it. So obviously this review is not for you.
Yeah, but not everyone has friends that give away their parts for free when they upgrade, right? I mean, who got their 2080 Ti for free when their friend upgraded to the 3090? Not me.
I don't.
That's because nobody was able to buy a 3090.
Yeah, that too.
I have a friend waiting to buy a 3090, and he won't give me his 2080 Ti. He's mean.
Yeah. Well, at least he didn't sell the 2080 Ti for $400.
Yeah.
Ooh.
If you're one, if you're one of those people, guys. Yeah, I'm sorry. We tried to tell you.
Yeah. There's some people that are still trying to sell theirs for $600 now. They actually went up in value.
Of course they did.
Because nobody can get the 30 series. That's, yeah.
Kirk, I told Donnie when I saw these cards, I said, I should buy these, sit on them, and sell them in a month and make a profit off of them. I promise you I can make like $50 to $100 a card.
Yeah. And yeah. That's assuming you didn't have to pay shipping.
Yeah. Shipping and fees and stuff is where you kind of run into the problem. But still, would have been money.
You're a secondhand scalper.
Anybody who picked up a secondhand 2080 Ti for $450 or something around there, they did pretty well.
They won
the internet.
Yeah.
Especially when we look at these numbers that are come out from NVIDIA. These are the first party numbers because they've finally released something from the 3070 in terms of what we can expect for performance. And it seems to, at 1440p, be trading blows with the 2080 Ti, which is cool because it's a $500 graphics card. But one thing that tells me is, one, it doesn't win at 4K, and that is obvious because the frame buffer is lower. You know, you can't make up for a 3 gigabyte deficit in VRAM.
Well, you can. It's called DLSS, right?
Well, I mean, that has the 2080 Ti has DLSS too. And it's not a different implementation. No, that's all software. So it's like, you know, I don't think there's any arguments to be made that, I don't even think NVIDIA is saying that DLSS has improved on the Ampere versus Turing. But looking at the numbers, I mean, they test at 1440p, highest game settings, RTX on with DLSS. And Borderlands 3, the 2080 Ti still wins because that does not have RTX. In Control, the 2080 Ti wins slightly. And let's see, Wolfenstein Youngblood and Minecraft have the 3070 winning.
Yeah, but that's because of the RT part as well. Remember?
Yeah, obviously the RT performance is where they have improved on the RT cores. Because as far as I understand with Ampere, they improve the tensor cores, but they also reduce the number of them. So they're actually getting the same throughput there with less.
Are we actually talking about Minecraft performance?
Yeah, I play Minecraft.
Oh, Minecraft RTX is very impressive.
I'm aware. I know. It's Minecraft that we're talking about.
It's like Sous Shaders. Come on.
It does seem to win in, you know, like actual compute workloads.
Which coincidentally are interleaved into these game benchmarks to make it look like there's better game performance, right? Do you notice that tactic?
This is something NVIDIA has never done before, by the way.
Yeah, put TimeSpy in here, there's LuxMark in here, and there's Blender, Arnold.
Redshift? I don't even know what Redshift is.
Yeah, they've hidden these inside the game benchmarks to make these pitiful game benchmarks not look as bad. If you notice, a lot of these huge spikes are, you know, Blender and Luxmark.
I mean, the nicest thing about this for the end user is that this tier of performance will be coming in at $500, and that AMD has to come close to have anything that's worth buying.
Yeah, so I don't mind.
That is the only thing I'll say about that. So at the very least, it's kind of cool that you can get what was $1,200 performance, you know, few months ago. Relatively speaking, for at this price point and the fact that it'll drive down the prices of the used market too.
Yeah, and if you look at the performance of the 5700 XT right here, 48% on 4K versus 2080 Ti at 72% at 4K. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty good jump. That's what, 24%
mm-hmm.
improvement, you know, mm-hmm. additive. So that's not bad. And that means that this new 3070 is being slightly ahead or behind, depending on where you look, is a pretty big jump from the $400 5700 XT. And so, yeah, AMD has their work cut out for them to be able to exceed and improve upon this performance, let alone the 3080 and the 3090, and come in at relatively decent price points at that.
I do, though, think that Jim's video makes some really valid points, which if you guys haven't watched it and you're watching this, why? You need to watch that first.
Or second. It's fine. You can just watch it right after this one.
I'm flattered if you're watching this first, though.
Like, legitimately, thank you.
Yes.
but I keep getting pulled back to the point that he made about the fact that this is the worst generation-to-generation improvement. And I think a part of why we feel this way is a lot of us, like it doesn't seem that way, is a lot of us just kind of pretended the 20 series didn't exist. And for a lot of people who are pretty, you know, pretty serial upgraders, they just stayed with their 10 series cards.
Yeah. And that, by the way, it's not the worst improvement. That's not what he said either. It's just not as good as some of the other ones.
Yeah, it's one of the worst.
One of the worst, excuse me.
Yeah.
I mean, compared to what we got used to between Maxwell and whatnot back in that era, you know, this was very underwhelming from a generation to generation standpoint. Not as a whole, though, because the 3080 does have some strong performance, but it pays for it with power and it just, they got it right there at the edge. There's no overclocking headroom hardly at all. And if you try, mm-hmm. it's going to cause stability issues. So make sure you vet it heavily.
I mean, the argument to make here, which I think Jim's point of that video, and maybe correct me if I'm misinterpreting it, I wish he was here, but we'll get into that another time, is that, how do I put this? The generational leaps that we're used to getting, we haven't been getting. And I understand that if you really do want to see a change in this sort of thing, it's to not buy a graphics card. So if you legitimately are frustrated in this stuff, there's only so much that, you know, tweeting at NVIDIA or sending angry letters will do. The sales numbers will make them sort of change their opinion on this. But I really don't know if that is, let me rephrase that. If you're totally fine with the performance you're getting and you really don't want to upgrade to these cards, especially because you're kind of fussed that the performance isn't what you're expecting them to be, there's no reason that you should have to buy these cards. I feel kind of odd that I have to make this statement, but it seems like a lot of people are kind of getting easily swayed by what people like me or you would say, Kirk. So I don't know. I feel like this statement is kind of there.
Well, there's no shame in buying one of the cheaper, older generation cards either. If you don't need the performance, pick up a 1660 Ti, pick up a 580 or a 5600 XT or any of these cheaper, more value-oriented cards, if they perform at the level that you need, use one of those. Don't buy a 3080 saying, oh, I'm going to sit on this card for 10 years, because you're not.
No.
You might be that one person that does, and by all means, you can do it, but why? You know, just buy a better one in 5 years when the 3080 is $200 or going on eBay because the next gen came out and people are liquidating them so they could buy the next gen. Hey, there's always a better proposition around the corner.
I mean, if you're trying to game at 1080p and 144 hertz, a 5600 XT is absolutely amazing.
Especially with variable rate.
So yes.
You can use the FreeSync and be good to go.
It even performs okay at 1440p. I know AMD is very specific when they made it that it's not really a 1440p card, which, I mean, it really isn't designed to be, but it can be serviceable if you're willing to, you know, deal with
that.
Dial
back those settings a little bit.
Yep. I mean, it's tolerable if you're not looking to get 120 FPS in every game you play. Or
who needs to see the bugs on the leaves of the grass? Come on.
Hey, you're gaming with that thing, you know?
Just turn on image sharpening. You'll be good.
The AMD DLSS.
Right.
Not quite.
Just wait till a DirectML becomes a thing.
I don't know what that is, Kirk, and you're scaring me.
It is a part of the DirectX 12 Advanced or whatever they're calling that again.
Oh, okay.
API. Okay. It's essentially just, it's a machine learning thing, and it's going to allow for something like DLSS.
I also kind of want to make this point here. I don't know about you guys, but I've been playing a lot of the games that I've already owned for a while. And besides Cyberpunk, there's not a lot I'm really excited for this year. If I wasn't, you know, a hardware reviewer, I probably wouldn't be interested in buying a card right now, simply because I don't know if there's really anything that I really need to upgrade for.
I barely have time to play games as it is, but I'm also doing school besides a full-time job, besides reviewing, and, you know, there's...
I mean, if you had more free time and you weren't doing that, and you was just working your 9-to-5, you know, is this really the generation that you need to upgrade? And I think these are the kind of questions as a consumer, as a buyer, that you need to ask yourself. Although, I will say this, in general, our audience seems to be very in tune with this stuff. So I might be kind of speaking, preaching to the choir.
Or beating a dead horse, one or the other.
Or beating a dead horse.
I think the one thing that I took away from Adored's video, honestly, is we meme about Fermi all day long, right? You know, the old grill that's cooking food and Jensen having his little burger flipper and all that.
Mm-hmm.
We ridicule this card for its poor performance and power usage that went through the roof and all of that. But yet this 30 series is the same thing. You know, mm-hmm. You get some performance that's not that great over generation.
But you get tons of performance.
Huge power draw, huge power spike. And so it is technically a little worse by Jim's numbers, 1% worse than what we got with Fermi. And yet, nobody has yet really sat there and memed that fact yet. They're all calling it this awesome video card that's great and all of that. And honestly, it's not. The power draw is atrocious. And it's going to turn people's bedrooms into a space heater because they are adding an extra 100 watts. And you're going to be looking at doing this undervolting stuff and everything in order to bring these cards back down into the realm of sanity, depending on how big your room is.
Hopefully Big Navi fixes all these issues. But I actually have a question for you guys, and if you guys can't answer it, maybe the electrical engineers listening can.
In the comments below.
Probably been yelling at me.
Yell at him in the comments below. That's what they're for. We do read them, trust me.
Wouldn't the sort of violent boosting that these cards seem to be doing be bad for the circuit itself? Or are they just sort of designed to tolerate this kind of stuff?
I mean, I would be probably speaking outside of my own knowledge to really say definitively, but I will say that they're not necessarily doing violent boosting in the sense that the clock speed isn't increasing drastically or anything like that. It's just that for whatever reason, the voltage spikes up. The power draw spikes up a lot with a slight increase in voltage once you get past 950 millivolts,
mm-hmm.
or so, or it might be a little less than that. But either way, once you get around that area, that's when, like, before under 950 millivolts, Ampere is more efficient than Turing, bottom line. But once you pass that, the curve just goes straight up. Like, it's an exponential increase in power. And the amount of power you're increasing at that point for the extra performance is not a lot. I mean, from some of the best examples I've seen show, like I said earlier, a 3% increase in performance for 1/3 increase in power. That's ridiculous.
Well, and I think to answer your question a little bit is, if we look at this from like the CPU perspective, we've seen what Intel and AMD in particular, since that's kind of more relevant because they have a GPU, what they have done with their boosting algorithms and such, we've seen AMD CPUs that go from a 0.8 volt to a 1.4 volt. And you remember the outcries that were happening when they were seeing 1.4, 1.43 volts as the core voltage?
Yes, you're talking about my 3900 that's sitting on the bench right now.
Yeah, and the thing is, it was already answered that these are transient values that only happen for a few cycles. Or
nanoseconds.
Yeah, nanoseconds worth of time. And so you have what you would describe as these huge rips of voltage spikes, you know, where it jumps almost half a volt. Well, it's accompanied by a clock speed increase. They go from like 1.6 up to a 4.6 kind of gigahertz. And mm-hmm. you get these wild changes in frequency as they do this whole race to stop kind of mm-hmm. mentality. You know, this big race to idle. And so, you know, we already see this happening in CPUs, and we don't fret about its degrading of the silicon mm-hmm. anymore. I mean, there has been that little talk about the constant running at a given voltage, and yeah, that could be degrading, but we're talking about transient values that quickly go back to more realistic numbers that don't cause harm. I think that already answers it.
Yeah, to be fair with these GPUs, we're not even seeing that much increase in voltage. We're talking like a couple of points increase versus, it's not half a milli, like half a volt or whatever. It's, you know, the difference between going up from 950 millivolts to 1 volt. I think maybe 1.1 volts.
Yeah, so we're still, you know, sub 1 volt kind of range, whereas with the CPUs, we're talking 1.4 kind of stuff. So we're already down in a very low voltage realm as it is. Mm-hmm. It's just really big. And so it has a lot more power draw because all of it is running at that 1 volt.
Correct. Yeah.
And we're also talking, you know, 2 gigahertz, you know, half the speed.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess the only thing I wanted to bring up besides that was the fact that what the real issue with Fermi cards were, at least that I remember, maybe I'm misremembering it, but I remember hearing horror stories of people saying that their cards caught on fire or just broke down because the cards were not built to the same kind of specs they are today, and that there was a lot of failures with Fermi, just because of the quality of engineering, which I think a lot of people don't realize.
I haven't heard, at least in my own circle, of anyone that bought Fermi that their cards caught on fire. Mm-hmm. The closest to that I can relate is a friend of mine that ran Fermi in SLI. So, mm-hmm. and they put it next to the wall, you know, like everyone does, the back's just venting out towards the wall. And mm-hmm. it actually caused discoloration and blistering of their paint on the wall. So needless
toasty
to say,
experience.
You could tell it was a little toasty, right? Well, imagine that's two Fermis pumping out, what, 200 watts each, right?
Mm-hmm.
Numbers that we just scoff
240
at.
240 watts or so.
But yeah, numbers that we kind of just scoff at now. We're looking at a single GPU that can pump out 400 watts in itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
I'll tell you guys what, if you live in the Northeast and You don't want to buy a space heater, but you're going to buy a graphics card anyways?
Don't worry, during those nor'easters, they won't have power to run in anyway.
Hey. I have not lost power very often during those.
Just once or twice a season, right?
No, the hurricanes bother way more, honestly.
I think the biggest problem with Fermi is that there weren't any cooling designs that were good enough to keep them cool.
I know a lot of people.
Nobody would pull out this RTX cooler back then, right? This thing is more metal than was in a computer case at the time.
I think when we complain about pricing to a certain point too, we need to accept that there is some much, much nicer products that are out there today than there were before. I mean, that being said, it's not a several hundred dollar difference. It's,
well, and you know, I even showed you to my 6770, and that thing, little dinky plastic shroud. It's a two slotter, but yet it has just this circle of aluminum that's the heat sink, and it's flimsy and light, and the board is blue. You know, there's no backplate.
A lot of cards didn't have a cover on them. It was just a PCB that you shoved into your system. A lot of the cheaper ones, at least. The more premium ones had that plastic shell that we all remember so fondly.
Yeah, everyone starts talking about whether the backplate is plastic or metal, right? Yeah, what a spoiled world we live in, right?
First world problems.
Yeah.
No, like honestly, and it's pretty interesting. If you remember, what generation was it that NVIDIA first started making metal shrouds, like really nice premium reference cards?
What, you mean the ones that look like the 980?
Sure.
The 7 series? I think the 6 series, they still had plastic shrouds, but the 690 was all aluminum, and it had that vapor chamber.
So the 690 was the first card to have that design, and then they standardized it across, like, basically all of the 700 series down to the 770.
But that's when they charged an extra $100 for the Founder Edition to make up for it.
Founders Edition started, I believe, with the 10 series, but the reference cards were just, they were reference. They don't call them anymore.
I thought the 980 had a Founders Edition.
The 980 used the same shroud design as the 700 series, but they didn't start calling them Founders Edition until they got the diamond shapes, like hexagonal weird, you know, in the 10 series, if I recall correctly.
And if not, be sure to correct us in the comments below.
But the bottom line is when they started making reference coolers that were luxurious, let's say, is the same time they started upcharging for the smaller dies. So it just goes to show you, when you have much more margin, you're going to put that some of that margin into making your product appear more luxurious.
Yep. And they do look really nice.
Like before then, like the 600 series, the 680 was meant to be the GTX 660, but the 7970 just wasn't competitive enough, and NVIDIA realized that they can upcharge for the smaller die, and they did.
And there's an entire Adored video about that, so if you want to watch any of his backlog, those are good ones. But I think that wraps up our discussions of Ampere for the evening, so thank you guys for participating and providing your opinions. These are some important things, especially right now on the eve of, well, Zen 3 coming out, and then later this month with RDNA 2. It's going to be an exciting month. My kid's been looking forward to this month for Halloween. I've been looking forward to it for other reasons altogether. And I think his, let's just say his college funds might be a little hampered by this month. We'll see. Uh-oh. I'm sure my pocketbook will fill it.
Let's hope this doesn't have to send the kid to University of Phoenix.
Hey, nothing wrong with that for anyone that's attending. Come on. But as much as we talk about making sensible upgrades for GPUs, CPUs are the thing I tend to make nonsensical upgrades for. So, you know, I'm right with you guys on those upgrades. I understand. I feel it because I'm looking at upgrading my CPU this month too. So we'll see.
Uh-oh.
Speaking of which, I think in the next one, we're probably going to talk a little bit more about AMD's side of things, with the RX 6000 launch upcoming, the leaks, as well as, you know, obviously the Ryzen 5000 series, as I think it's now fairly confirmed that they'll be calling it.
Yeah, which is a whole nother topic. But we'll see you on the next one for that. And thanks for watching. Be sure to hit that like, subscribe button, all that other SEO stuff. Leave comments below, and we will talk to you in the next one.